This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Dolan Show!
Casement Park is the ultimate political football, and we kick it around on the programme today with some politicians and some people from within sport and try to answer those two key questions. Will Casement Park now ever be built? And if it is going to be redeveloped, who's going to pay for it? Have a listen.
The Stephen Dolan Show!
OK, there are five big questions we're going to try to answer on the programme today, and we need your help. We really need your help. So please ring us or text us. You haven't really had a chance on a phone-in programme since that news was sneaked out on Friday night about Casement. So we're going to try and answer these five questions. Will it ever be built? Will the London government help to pay for it? And on that, why did they sneak that announcement out at 7:10 after the evening news on a Friday evening? Also, what now for the Irish FA and their chief executive, Patrick Nilsson, after they backed Casement and lost effectively when it's not going to happen for the Euros? Why didn't they have a plan B? And what is Stormont going to do now to make sure we do at least get some benefit from the Euros in 2028 happening all around us, but we're not able to stage any matches? Let's start there. What's Stormont going to do? Let's speak to three of our politicians. The DUP MLA Philip Brett is chair of the Economy Committee. The SDLP MP Colm Eastwood is also with us, as is the Alliance Party MLA David Honeyford, who's been very critical of the DUP. We'll come to you, David, on that. Let's start with the DUP. Good morning, Philip Brett.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Oh, good. Now, you're a big Northern Ireland fan. We'll come to that. But let's cut to the quick on the money issue. Will DUP MLAs at Stormont, including your minister, Gordon Lyons, back more Stormont money to make sure Casement is now eventually built?
Mark, as you'll be aware, the last week has been dominated here in Northern Ireland by discussions in relation to the budget and the pressures that we are facing. But Casement Park was part of a package that was agreed by a DUP minister in 2011, one which was fair and equitable. And we stand wholly behind the agreement that we made and the funding that we said that we would support at that time.
Oh, Philip, I mean, that was what? 2011, look at inflation since then. You can't stick by that 62.5 million. Surely you might need even to double that.
What we'll also have to bear in mind is that this was part of a fair and equitable agreement. And as you'll have seen from Gerard Lawler today, the chief executive of grassroots football here in Northern Ireland, that they've been starved of funding since that 2011 agreement was made also. So if we are going to look at funding packages, it will need to be based on fair and equitable settlement. But there are also public services right across Northern Ireland that are in dire need of funding. So all of this will need to be looked in the round.
Sounds like a no, Philip Brett.
It sounds like we need to prioritise services across Northern Ireland, and we need to do what we've always done in Northern Ireland and ensure that all communities and that all organisations receive fair and equitable funding settlements.
Colm Eastwood, what do you think?
Well, I think this has been a mess for a long time. It's a bit ridiculous to say that there was an agreement 13 years ago and that that's all we're going to do. And in fact, you know, Casement should have been built years and years and years ago. And we ended up in this situation because it hadn't been built, because the executive hadn't got on with the job of getting it built, and largely because the DUP hadn't helped with that. We now have had a very difficult weekend where people had to hear on a Friday night that was no way to handle anything, that the British government wouldn't be ponying up the money. Now, frankly, I didn't believe the Tories when they said that that money was guaranteed. I just didn't believe it because they've been making so many unfunded promises right across the public sector, not just here but over in England as well, that I found it hard to believe. But it's just a real tragedy, actually, that it seems now that we're going to miss out on that opportunity of the Euros. We also have to remember there's lots of other stadiums across the north that haven't been funded either. Mm. I know my own home team, the Derry City and the Brandywell, have been crying out for years for support and haven't got it. So I've said there has been a litany, actually, of failure in terms of developing stadia across the north from this executive.
Can I put you on the spot? Because I know you don't have too much time. You have to go shortly. So you're saying yes to more money from the executive. Are you saying yes to more money from the GAA themselves? And maybe even more than that $40 million that Simon Harris has pledged from the Irish government?
Well, I think the first thing needs to happen is we need to stop the megaphone diplomacy. This has gone on for far too long. People need to be brought into a room, representatives of the GAA, the British government, the executive and the Irish government, and we need to thrash this out, because Gael shouldn't be having to wait for this length of time to have Casement built. It needs to be built. How it's built and who pays for it is a conversation that has to be thrashed out through negotiations. You know, I think we all need to learn something about this last weekend, where some of us had to spend an awful lot of time speaking to very senior British ministers to get the city deal issue resolved. If we had just left it at officials making statements, nothing would have ever been sorted out. So I think that's the lesson. You get people into a room and need to get a decision made, but the stadium needs to be built.
David Honeyford, what's your view?
It's just really disappointed, Mark, at the start of Good Relations Week. This would have been the 30th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. The Euros of 2028 coming would have been a statement of how far we've come, and it's just frankly gotten that this isn't going to happen now and we're going to miss out.
You've had a pop at the DUP. Tell us what you said on social media.
I haven't had a pop at the DUP. I simply, matter of fact, the day the Assembly came back, I was talking to a high official in the Department of Communities, and they said that everything was ready to go within a matter of days out to tender, and that tender's still sitting on the minister's desk. The Minister for Education was able to put a segregated education and single site out without funding to tender, but yet the Minister of Communities wasn't able to take Casement Park and put out a tender to actually give us a price, because what you've got is plucking figures from Sky and going and making it sound worse.
Well, so David, if you want to build a garage beside your house, I don't know if you've got room, you'll get a rough estimate yourself before you actually put an official process out. I mean,
so why is it one rule, Mark, for one department and one rule for a different department? So if whenever we're talking about the segregated education on the single site in OMA, that went out to tender without guaranteed funding. And the argument was used, and I raised this in the House, why is that able to happen, but we can't get out and get a tender document and get a price back that then we can work from the Department of Communities? It's exactly the same process, and then you would have a figure now in front of you that everybody could go, right, this is the figure, and as Colm says, then you sit down in the room and you thrash out who pays and where the money comes from.
Philip Brett?
Well, I just want to go back to the point that Colm made to try and say that the reason the Casement hadn't been built since 2011 was the fault of the DUP. It wasn't the DUP minister who tried to bury safety concerns in relation to exits at that stadium. It wasn't the DUP branch of the Andersonstown Residents Association that brought the application to the public hearing to have it struck down. So I think it's very disingenuous to try and blame the DUP for this not going ahead. In relation to what David says, David knows fine well that we've been waiting for a number of months to hear what the UK government would contribute to this scheme. It would not be rational to go out to a tender when we don't know how we're going to pay for this scheme. And listen, people may wish to blame the DUP, and that's their own prerogative, but some of those shouting loudest would be better to look at their own backyard, because they have contributed to why Casement hasn't been built. We awarded funding to that project in 2011, and some others should have got on with building it since then.
Are you really saying, Philip Brett, not a penny more from the price you agreed in 2011?
What I'm saying, Mark, and I've said it clearly, is that there are pressures on the executive's budget across a whole range of issues, be that health, education or housing. What I am saying is that there was an agreement made that all sports would receive equitable funding.
Okay.
And any attempt to move away from that would have to be fair and balanced.
Stay with us. I want to talk to you about the IFA. I want to talk to David Honeyford as well about the IFA and why they didn't have a plan B. Maybe there is no possibility of a plan B in a small country like Northern Ireland. Colm Eastwood, I know you need to go. Before you go, tell us about two things. Tell us about city deals and tell us what you expect to happen next over Casement.
Well, what I think should happen next over Casement is, as I've said, all the parties should get into a room and we need to thrash this out. I mean, and that's just the only way this will get resolved. In terms of City deals, well, that was a total mess on Friday evening. I think it was a communication from an official in the Treasury and then the whole thing blew up. What I spent the weekend doing was speaking to people like the Secretary of State, to people like Darren Jones, the Chief Secretary, to the Treasury to try to get this resolved, and thankfully it was resolved. Obviously, the British government are looking at everything, given the mess and Casement's a case in point where they make big promises trying to win an election but don't have the money to back it up. But I was always worried about a lot of these funds because they were looking at everything, but we were able to get it back because once the politicians get involved, you can sort problems out. And I just think that's a lesson that we've learned. But thankfully now we are where we are. We have the Derry one is being signed on Wednesday. The Belfast one has already begun. Now we need to continue the work to make sure that those other two that aren't just as urgent and that they're not just as far down the line, but that they need to get funded. And I'll do whatever I can to support that as well.
And one last one. You're a friend of the Labour Party, a critical friend.
Critical friend.
Have the events of the past week or so left you scratching your head, wondering, has this government really changed at all?
Well, look, I mean, I am a critical friend. We're in different political parties and we vote differently sometimes, but it's important to be there to influence them and to use that influence. And actually, I think that was useful over the weekend and been able to get to people that maybe some others weren't able to get speaking to. And we used that influence and others were very supportive as well. And we got it over the line. The City deal, something that I and others goes right back to Mark Durcan, have been campaigning for when other parties didn't support it when they were in the executive. But now we've got it. It's being signed on Wednesday and the money can begin to be spent on Thursday.
You're still going to the party conference next week, I take it, are you?
Absolutely, yeah. I go every year to make sure that we use whatever influence that we can. And you'll see at times I'll be in different voting lobbies, just like John Hume and Mark Durcan and everybody else did.
And one last thing. I haven't spoken to you since you decided to stand down as party leader. Missing it?
No. I'm still actually a party leader for another couple of weeks.
Oh, but I didn't realise that.
Until the 5th of October. But yeah, look, it's a decision I'm very, very comfortable with and very happy about. And delighted that Claire's going to be the new leader and she'll have my full support.
Colm Eastwood, thank you very much. Still SDLP leader for another couple of weeks. Speaking of leadership, Philip Brett, the IFA, they stuck their neck out for Casement. They felt, and most people agree with them, it was just unrealistic to try and grow Windsor Park to more than 30,000 capacity. What do you think are the repercussions for the IFA, given that they put all their money on Casement and lost?
Yeah, as you'll know, Mark, having interviewed me at football stadiums across the world, I'm a big fan of Northern Ireland and travel the world to watch them. And to be able to see our home country play in a European Championship on home soil should have been the stuff of dreams. And that's why I advocated, since this bid became public, both publicly and privately, to the IFA, that they should be advocating for this to be played at a football stadium to ensure a legacy for football. I was in Bulgaria last weekend watching Northern Ireland play, and the reaction from the fans to the leadership of the IFA currently is the worst that I have ever witnessed. I think now is an opportunity for the leadership of the IFA to reflect on how they've handled the situation for the past 2 years and how they're going to ensure a proper legacy for football for the Euros. But the fact that we're not hosting the Euros and not hosting it at a football stadium has serious questions for the leadership of the IFA.
Unpack that for me. Are you calling for Patrick Nelson to step down?
I don't get into personalities on these issues, Mark. I ask people to reflect on the job that they're meant to do, and Patrick's job is to reflect the interests of the fans of the Northern Ireland national team, and he now needs to look at how he takes steps to regain that trust and support.
Have you confidence in him?
I have confidence in the IFA. I have confidence in the fan base, and I have confidence that moving forward we'll all get behind the team. And it's now for the leadership to prove to those loyal fans of the Northern Ireland national team that the right leadership is in place.
Well, if somebody from the IFA wants to come on and defend Patrick Nelson, we're on till 10:30. I suppose he would say, you know what, Windsor Park, how could you redevelop Windsor Park? There's a railway end. There's a railway at one end. There's a leisure centre at another end. You have all of that housing. Windsor was never going to work. Anyway, Patrick Nelson, pick up your phone if you're listening or if your press officer is listening. Let's talk about the GAA with David Honeyford, because you're pretty steeped in the GAA. You've got your own club, haven't you?
I'm pretty steeped in quite a few sports, Mark, but I am a member of Glenavy, proud member of Glenavy, which I joined at a later time. I didn't grow up in that community, and when my kids were in the rugby, okay. We did a community event to bring the two communities together, and that's actually how I got involved in politics, okay, through that. So I don't come from that background, but I am a proud member of Glenavy GAA, yeah.
David, knowing GAA folk as you do, yeah, I just wondered on Friday night when they heard that news, the people who have put a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of late nights into Casement, whether they reflected over the weekend, you know what, every which way we turn, there's an obstacle here. Let's forget about Casement for Ulster Finals.
Mark, I think the IFA and the GAA should be congratulated. And really, they showed a lot of ambition. They tried to bring the third biggest world sports event to us, here. They showed ambition that the likes of those screaming and crying now have never offered a future. They've never offered
hope. But it didn't happen. Where was the realism?
It didn't happen, so do you not try to do something because you mightn't it mightn't work? In this case, it has failed to bring the Euros. But I personally want to see leadership that tries to push the boundaries and push us forward. If that tournament had have happened in Belfast, it's more than having Casement Park built. It's bringing the community together. It breaks down the barriers between, you know, West Belfast and people coming into West Belfast, people in West Belfast accepting Northern Ireland fans coming in. This was the opportunity for reconciliation. And as the Alliance Party, we will always fight and argue and push and press for reconciliation. And that this was the opportunity that would have, every programme of TBOC or everything you ever want to do, this would have done it in a very short period of time and just broken down barriers on the 30th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. Now, what was not to like in that? So,
okay,
Philip's comments about the IFA, I understand there's a breakdown between some of the fans there, but we've got to look at the positives of what they tried to achieve.
Okay, let's go to the lines. Sorry, Philip, I'll let you come back in there briefly.
I'm just to share, David, I'm not sure what you're talking about, David. I'm neither crying nor screaming, but I think it's also important that when you do have a plan, you also have a plan B, and the fact that the IFA didn't have a plan B is something that...
There is no plan B.
Scrutiny.
And there is no other option.
The point that we're making, David. This was a football tournament, and they should have had a plan B, but we are where we are now.
What was the plan B that you would have come up with, Philip Brett?
What I advocated from the very start was the simple one, that this is a football tournament and should be played at a football stadium. Yes, there's a railway end at Windsor Park, but I'm also a long-suffering Manchester United fan as well, and we're about to redevelop a stadium with a railway end there as well, so all these things were possible. The fact that the IFA decided not to explore in any serious manner the extension of Windsor Park is something that they need to answer for.
Then you're into money, then you're into planning, Philip, and you know better than me. You could have been waiting to Euro 2038, never mind 28.
And that's why if you have a plan B, Mark, you test these things and try to make sure that there's something in place.
Mark, in Wales, they're playing in a rugby stadium, and nobody's suggesting there's no legacy. So
okay. Okay.
Yeah. But
let's
Mark,
move on.
Philip,
move on. Let's go to the calls. Gary, you've been very patient on the Shankill. Big Northern Ireland fan, are you?
I am indeed, Mark, and also, you know, like Philip, I've been to every major football tournament. In fact, I've been to every major world final in world football, and I'm a staunch unionist. I'm a Northern Ireland fan, and I'm a Linfield fan, and I'm one of the ones that, from the start, has been calling for Casement to be built. It should be built, and it must be built for the betterment of Antrim and local GAA and a legacy for the GAA, but in my opinion, this was never a starter. Anyone, and you're going to get callers after callers, but you need someone on that really knows, you know, what they're on about. Anyone that's ever been to a major football tournament could have seen that from the start the Casement was non-viable. I'll give you a few examples. Right, UEFA would have needed facilities for segregation. Right, there's only one way in and one way out of Casement on a main arterial route. There was no way of segregating fans. The infrastructure outside the stadium was never right. I mean, God forbid, had there been a disaster. You know, where was the emergency services getting up and down the Antrim Road if it was packed with cars or buses? And then, you know, you move on to what UEFA would have required. You have hundreds of UEFA facilities. They'd have been looking UEFA facilities in the stadium underneath the stands, out with the okay. match officials. You'd have been looking at media facilities. But listen, it must be built. And in my opinion, the fault lies with the IFA. People's asking and saying that Windsor couldn't be revamped. Look at Anfield. They put a top tier on the Anfield Road end while the ground was still open.
Gary,
two corners there could have been redeveloped also.
Would you have gone? If they had found the money, if they had it built in time, as a Northern Ireland fan, would you have gone?
Honestly, my heart would have said yes, and my head would have said no. I don't know. I think I might have went in the end, but you know, it was never. I mean, I'm looking back here at all went on. You have to look back to it. Whose fault this wasn't built? It was £70 million, I think, in 2012 and 2010, and the residents held it up with this dispute. It then moved on to like 2 or 3 years later, and the revamped stadium was approved at a cost of what, over £100 million, more than double what the other two codes got, £120-130 million. And then just after that, there in 2017. Sinn Féin clapped Stormont, so that was it. That was, you know, you look back to whose fault it was. Yeah. It was the IFA's fault, in my opinion, for running with it. They should have stuck to what they were put into. Look after football and local football, a legacy for local football, which the GAA will do with Casement when it is built. And it will be built,
okay.
But it will be built to the specimens of what's required for the GAA, nowhere near the cost that's being put out now.
That's Gary on the Shankill. Graham's in Portadown. Morning, Graham.
Good morning, Mark. I mean, whose mad idea was this? £400 million on another white elephant is just going to actually increase community division. Because let's be honest about it, one side won't, well, go one side won't not. And then we're going to give the proceeds of the building away to a private company.
Okay, Graham.
And obviously, it should never be built. Never be built.
Not a great line. Let's see if it's any better. On the Andersonstown Road, Paul is there. Paul, you're right beside the stadium. What's your view?
Good morning, Mark. That's absolutely correct. I live just beside Jason Park. People up here are quite disappointed, but unsurprised. They're not. There's no surprise that the British government have failed to come up with the money. And I have to say, it's nice of Gary to get involved from the Shankill, commenting on the infrastructure in the Andersonstown Road. But there you go. That the two things, Mark, that I've come on to speak about are the credibility of the £400 million figure snuck out on Friday night at 7:10. How much credibility is in that there? Where are the figures, the facts and figures that back up £400 million? Plus, what I've noticed all weekend is the unbridled joy across social media that the UEFA tournament isn't going to be in Belfast, simply because it's in Casement Park in West Belfast. That was quite striking all over the weekend.
In terms of the £400 million, what I've been told by government sources is they did their own independent analysis of what it would take to build Casement in the next 3 years. And that's the figure an independent consultant came up with. Paul, it's a bit like buying, and I said this earlier on the airwaves,
A toothbrush
in an airport. You know, you're saying to people, yeah, we need it and we need it now, and you're going to have to pay the price for that.
But Mark, the difference being is there was the British government gave assurances that this stadium would be built. The British government put forward Casement Park as one of the host grounds, and then they've done what the British government will always do.
That's Paul in Andersonstown in West Belfast. Paddy's also in West Belfast. Morning, Paddy. What's your point?
Good morning. Right. There's a nice bowl being built at the moment. Started off at £40 million. The average price for that is now over 100 million.
This is the ice bowl in Dundonald. I don't have the figures in front of me. What's your point about Casement?
Right, well, Casement, the communities minister, think back to the day that the hunt was run. He was supposed to take the finance job, and it was delayed the whole rollout of the hunt because he opted for the communities. So he was put in the job at the start to stop Casement Park. That's a fact.
Well, Sinn Féin could have taken the communities ministry. They had a couple of picks before then.
It was supposed to be all rolled out beforehand, and he wasn't taking that job. It was a shock to everybody that he opted for the communities.
Well, he's not in charge of the British government, which could have come up with the 400 million.
But maybe the 100 million for the ice bowl, who's that going to benefit? Yet I've never heard people on this programme demanding at the 90 or the 100 million be given to the health service. On a daily basis on this programme, we have people ringing in and saying, don't give the money to Casement, give the money to the health service.
Paddy, thank you. One more call before the 9:30 news. Let's go to Ballymena. Jimmy, what about you?
I'm good.
What's your point?
If Casement Park means so much to the GAA, why did they let it deteriorate to such a low standard that it's in today? Why was it allowed to deteriorate to into the state it's in?
Have you a radio on in the background, Jimmy? I can hear some music.
I'm in a shopping centre. Hold on to step into the car park.
Quickly, Jimmy. Quickly, because right. Grania's got the 9:30 news coming up.
Right. I'm in a car park now. Why did they let it deteriorate so much if Casement Park means so much to them? And now they're wanting everybody to be involved in rebuilding it. But they had a stadium. They let it go deteriorate. And to say, why did they do that?
Jimmy, you know this place well. In a sentence, do you think it will ever be rebuilt?
No.
You don't. You don't.
No.
Well, let us know what you think. That's Jimmy, that's Paddy, that's Paul, that's Gary. They've all had their say. Keep in touch with us here on the Nolan programme. It's Mark Simpson in the hot seat. We're going to talk more about Casement. We're going to talk to the former DUP Special Advisor, David Graham. We're going to talk to Tom Kelly, former SDLP Head of Communications. We're also going to talk to the commentator, Chris Donnelly. And if you'd seen social media at the weekend, you would have seen that he had a big, big go at me. But we're going to have a little rattle at each other on the airwaves on the biggest show in the country. Good morning, Chris, my friend.
Good morning, Mark. Do you think I was having a go at you, Mark?
Yes. I wrote an article for the BBC News NI website talking about what went wrong with Casement. I talked about time, money, size and politics. You said I missed something out. Tell us.
Yes, and I think I thought it was important that we don't ignore something. I think it's unfortunately and depressing been a critical factor throughout the discussion about the potential build of a new exciting Casement Park, and that's been the sectarian dimension. It's been very clear throughout, Mark, that there have been people within the society have been dead set against Casement Park being rebuilt in the way that we many people hoped with the offer that the British government was putting on the table to include, really, Casement was the only way that Northern Ireland was going to be included in the joint bid of the British throughout the British Isles for Euro 28. And to my mind, it was very, I mean, we had a discussion on your show, this show, and on the Nolan's TV show over the last number of months about how this, it was an unprecedented opportunity for us to get a stadium that was going to be transformational in terms of what we as a society could offer in terms of hosting not just bigger sporting events. And I know me and you share a love of American sports. I mean, only a couple of weeks ago, there was look at some of the economists saying, you know, well over 100 million euro went to the Dublin economy from Georgia Tech upsetting Florida State in Dublin. That game, you know, last year it was Notre Dame Navy. I was down at it. Look at the concerts that go to Dublin. That was our, having a rebuilt Casement was our only in to have that type of a venue that could draw people maybe having to get on flights from Britain and other places to come here. What that does, not just in terms of concert tickets, staying overnight, the hospitality sector, the entertainment sector. It was a win-win. And yet, in spite of all that, Mark, you would have been very aware, and I was aware, there were people who were dead set against us throughout. And even if you look at the way that people went after Sue Gray in the last, some of the London press, some more closer to home, were getting very personal, saying, why is Sue Gray taking on this Sinn Féin project? I saw an article, and I tweeted over the weekend, Mark, you might have seen it, where Caseland is described as a venue, something where the echoes of evil would ring out. What a despicable comment for people to be writing. And that was very clear throughout this, that there has been a sectarian campaign to stop Casement Park being built as part of this project. And unfortunately, you know, it became more clear as time went on, Mark, that the time was running out. And I think Jarlath Burns made that clear yesterday. You know, he really felt from March, when there wasn't movement, that it was slipping away. And now we're in a different game. We're in a game of saying, well, okay, GAA needs a stadium. But I think Cathal O'Kane was very good on Good Morning Ulster, the Irish news journalist this morning, saying, look, there's a problem here, because if we don't end up with a stadium bigger than Clonus, then why?
What's the point?
Will continue.
What's the point?
Yeah. What's the point? And again, that's an economic driver for Clonus, for the southern economy. So we're going to lose out again, all because, I think, of short-sightedness and small-mindedness. And it's a tragedy.
Tom Kelly, you rode to my rescue on X at the weekend, saying that by talking about Casement maybe being a little too hot to handle for politicians, I did cover some of the issues that Chris is talking about, though I wouldn't go as far as he did, because in terms of maybe there was an element of unionists not doing enough, but there were other issues there. There were legal issues, there were planning issues, and there also was the time issue.
Yeah, and I agree with you that it's a bit more complex. I don't disagree necessarily with completely with Chris's assessment that there were elements of sectarianism within unionism that were always opposed to it, but they'd be opposed to it next week even if the money had been given for the project. It is kind of complex because, you know, you have that proverb that success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. In this case, the orphan ends up being Casement. And it needs to be built. It needs to be built as a stadium. It will still be the largest stadium if people get their act together and actually deliver it. Because what's been missing from this entire project has been deliverability. And I think what happened was, in some ways, the Tories over-egged the Casement thing very glibly. And I don't know how many times journalists asked the previous Secretary of State, you know, well, what money are you putting into this scheme? And, you know, he was evasive about it right up until the end to leave the problem back onto Labour. I think when some of the callers are asking about how did the costs escalate, I think the government has responsibility to explain how those costs are made. I assume that those costs are based on a risk factor in the sense that they have escalated from 300 to 400 million, because effectively if the British government steps in, they would have become the underwriters of the entire project. And therefore, any additional costs, and we've seen how those things overrun, if you look at the Children's Hospital in Dublin, larger major infrastructural projects tend to overrun. And therefore, the British, whoever did the assessment for them, whatever actuary looked at that, probably said, well, this could end up being 400 million. And against the current backdrop of Starmer trying to balance the books, they probably thought that was too big to handle. But Casement is too big to fail, and people need to get their act together and build a stadium fit for Antrim and Ulster GAA.
Tom, you know the Labour Party well. You're probably going to the party conference next week, are you?
Yes, yeah.
Would you expect them to dig deep for Casement, even though the Euros aren't going to be held there?
I expect them to put money where their mouth is in terms of recalibrating relationships between Britain and Ireland and North and South. And they seem to have a willing partner in the government and the Republic, particularly through the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach. And they've already said their money stays on the table. So there should be money coming from the British government to this project. Now, an extra 200 million and an extra 300 million, these figures are, you know, as somebody said, they're grass from the air. But I think that the British government do need to step in and make a substantial contribution to Casement to make sure that Casement is built. You can't do what Philip Brett's suggesting, which is bury your head in the sand and pretend that there's been no inflationary costs over the past 13 years. There has. And if you talk to anybody in the development world, they'll tell you how much the cost of even building a house have escalated, never mind a carriage, the example that you used yourself, Mark. But the main thing is, I think that the British government will make a contribution And Stormont may have to go back and look at what their contribution would be, as will the GAA. I think, I mean, I'm a GAA member. I've been long associated with the association. I've been a former chairman of a club. And I do think that when costs escalate, you do have to look at the entire project and all parties getting around the table ASAP, which is what I thought the government would have done back in July after the election. They would have called all the parties to the table and thrashed out a solution, or as people say, a plan B for casement.
Tom, knowing this place as you do over the course of 6 decades, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Do you think casement will be built?
Yes, and it's long overdue. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the last game at casement. I remember being taken to casement as a kid. I have to admit, I do have a fondness for Clonus because it was a great day out, and I certainly something that I'd miss. But I think ultimately, a city like Belfast needs a substantial stadium with capacity to hold large-scale events. And I hope that the GAA are open to that. You know, forget about the Euros now, that ship has sailed. But, you know, it should be open to other large-scale sporting events, as Chris alluded to there, maybe American football.
Mm. Tom, I want to come back to you in a moment or two on the whole issue of how this was handled by Labour, by the Secretary of State, Hilary Benn, including the fact that this news was effectively sneaked out at 7:10 on a Friday night after all the evening news programmes, and a few people put on social media, you know, good time to bury bad news. Mervyn Gibson, the Grand Secretary of the Orange Order, said, "Is it bad news?" Mervyn, good morning. What did you mean by that?
Well, Mark, simply because it wasn't bad news for everyone, because a lot of people didn't want to see the government coming in and subsidising this particular project, or else they'd have to subsidise rugby and football, because this was an agreement reached between the three sports. It was an allocation, I think it was about $62 million to the GAA, $25 million or $31 million to the IFA, and $14 million to the Ulster Rugby. That was the deal that was done. If the British government had stepped in, then they'd have to look at how they're going to sponsor the other sports as well.
You will have heard Chris Donnelly say there's been a sectarian element to unionists' approach to casement. Some might say, Mervyn, that was a case in point. You didn't need to get your phone out and tweet that on Friday night, but you did. Who said this is bad news? Well, a lot of people in the GAA and broader spectrum within nationalism were devastated by that news.
A lot of people don't need the tweet, Mark, but everybody's entitled to their opinion, I have to say, and some of the commentators on express their opinion explicitly on Twitter on many occasions, so I have no difficulty in tweeting it. Personally, I believe casement will be built. Does casement need to be built? I do think it needs to be built. Does it need to be subsidised by the Westminster government? I don't believe it does unless they reopen the whole thing.
Are you a football fan, Mervyn?
I would be, yes.
If it had been built for soccer matches as well as GAA matches, would you have gone?
I think I'd have difficulty going, because there is issues with the GAA in regard to its political aspirations, in regard to be, it's not just a sporting organisation, it's a political organisation, and it glorifies certain aspects of it, glorify terrorism, and that would create a difficulty for me in going to the stadium. But that's not to say GAA aren't entitled to a stadium in West Belfast. They've already, I think, $120 million in the bag. Surely that can build a decent stadium that will accommodate GAA. They don't need to make it a stadium where they want to bring Taylor Swift or American football, whoever else they can. They wanted to use it as an Antrim, and also want to use it as an Ulster stadium. And I have no difficulty with that. Where the difficulty arose is when they expect the British government to pick up the tab for the $100 or $200 million that was missing. Indeed, Charlotte Burns implied that that was reparations for all the British have done to the Irish over the years. You know, so there is a political aspect to this that we can't ignore.
I can't believe I'm going to ask you this, Mervyn Gibson, but are you a Taylor Swift fan?
No, but I have family who are, I have to say.
The reason is, you know, whether it's in West Belfast or wherever, do we not need somewhere here within Northern Ireland, the country that you believe is here to stay and needs to be viable forever, do we not need a stadium where we could have a Taylor Swift or a Coldplay or a Robbie Williams? I'm showing my age now.
I think we do, to be honest with you. But it wasn't at this instance, it wasn't Casement Park.
Chris Donnelly, what do you think?
I think that's a perfect example of the scorched earth mentality so many within political unionism have. you know, a wiser council within unionism, looking at the changing society, the changing demographics, would say, showing that this place works, building something positive, even if it's in West Belfast, actually where you're going to have Northern Ireland football team play. Because let's be clear, it would have been the biggest stadium, which would have meant not just after the Euros. What if Northern Ireland drew a big game against Germany or Spain and they knew they could fill Windsor Park twice over? They would go to the GAA and say, listen, could we use Caseland Park? And they would have got it, because the precedent would have been set during Euro 28. It would have been a positive thing. And, you know, the answer, what I'm hearing there from Mervyn Forto is, you know, I'm laying out the conditions to say, here's how you make Northern Ireland work. Now, I'm somebody who wants Irish unity, but I don't want it by saying, let's wreck this place and show that it can never work. But unfortunately, that's the mentality. That's kind of the logic of what Mervyn's saying. You build something, you make Northern Ireland better. You make it a more profitable society. What's now going to happen? Well, Taylor Swift's not coming here. It's going to continue coming to Dublin. Big concerts, people are going to go to Dublin. Even at the moment, Clonus is going to continue to be the venue for the Ulster Finals. One other thing that sticks in my craw, we talk about rugby got a stadium and soccer got a stadium, GAA for a sport. GAA isn't that a sport. It's an umbrella organization. There are actually many sports days play there. There are women's Gaelic football. There's camogie. There's hurling. There's Gaelic okay. football, men's Gaelic football too. And I just think it's important because there's a range of sports that are played there that people are losing out on at the moment. And it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy that small-mindedness really has helped kill this at the moment. Yes, I'm very hopeful that Caseland will get built, but I don't even know if it's going to be big enough to wrench off Clonus the provincial finals now.
Quick comeback, Mervyn.
I think, to be honest, it's not small-minded at all. I think he's ignoring the reality is that aspects of GAA still glorify terrorism. Not saying all the GAA, but aspects of GAA clubs, certain clubs glorify terrorism, and that's difficult for the unionist community to accept. And then to say, oh, there, we're going to have a great stadium here, the money's going to be made, it's going to be poured back into the GAA, and they're still glorifying terrorism.
Mervyn, do you know the history of soccer in this part of Ireland? Because I don't begrudge Windsor Park being rebuilt at all. Even though we could go through the whole history of Belfast Celtic, we could talk about how Clevenville have been treated. I was myself in the crowd in the early 90s when we had a grenade thrown at us when we were playing Linfield at Windsor Park. Does that mean I should be against Northern Ireland football getting a good stadium like that? No, it does not at all. It's ridiculous.
But I don't know.
So, you know, the point is that people want bigger. People want better. People want to move on.
And you're right, Chris. But let me say, the people who threw the grenade at you aren't being glorified by the Irish Football Association. But those who murdered policemen, those who murdered civilians, both Protestant and Roman Catholic, are being glorified by aspects of the GAA.
You do know that, again, because I don't believe when you're talking about glorifying, but you do know that there is remembrance events held in local soccer. Now, people will tell you there are people in the society who were murdered by the British Army, who were murdered by the RAC, who were murdered by the UDR. But I don't use that as an excuse to go against local soccer. And I want the local soccer stadia now to be progressed as well as the GAA, by the way. I go to local soccer matches. I'd love to see Glentoran get their new stadium. I'd love to see my own club, Clonmel, get a new stand. Derry City wants something. Coleraine wants something. That's what we want out of all this. We want something better for people.
Because
at the end of the day, life's tough, Mervyn. You know, we don't need to go back 30, 50, 70 years.
And so do I. As the Glentoran supporter, I would welcome the stadium. But there's no equivocation between remembering members of the British Crown Forces and terrorism.
Let's go back to Let's go back to this whole issue of Friday night. Tom Kelly, knowing this Labour government as you do, how do you judge their handling of this issue?
Well, I think along with the city deals, I think it was an absolute mess. Dumping news on a Friday night just doesn't work. I've been working in the media now for 30 years. And, you know, my attitude is, anyone who thinks they can get away with doing that kind of act these days in particular. It used to be something you did in the era of faxes and you knew nobody would be in the newsroom and nobody would pick it up and journalists were sitting.
Did you used to do it, Tom? Did you?
Fine rightly that it was the best way, in my words, to get rid of bad news was to stick it out on a Friday night. But nobody seriously can get away with that in the digital age with social media. It was naive to think that it could. In reality, they are now putting the cart back behind the horse by saying they're going to sit down and talk to everybody. They should have done that in the first place. I think that Caseland has needed a degree of transparency and openness from all sides if they want to deliver it. But like I say, now just focus and deliver the damn thing.
Speaking of spin doctors, David Graham, former DUP special advisor, is on the line. Is that fair to call you a spin doctor? Maybe that's unfair. Well, you were at Rangers in Linfield handling the media, weren't you?
Yes. No, don't worry. I'll raise that with Director General the next time I'm on, Mark. Thanks for that. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, David. What's your overall take on Casement?
Well, look, I think Stephen Beacom summed it up very well in his article where he said, you know, there are no winners in this entire situation. And I think that's entirely right. I mean, the GAA were promised, like Ulster Rugby, like the IFA, that they would be provided money to expand their facilities about a decade and a half ago, Mark, and yet that hasn't happened. And look, we can either blame the British government, we can either blame it Stormont, because we've had more time with Stormont down than it being up and functioning. But ultimately, we are where we are now, and I think that, you know, the GAA unquestionably should be provided, you know, parity of esteem. They should be provided facilities. I think my problem that has been set here, in amongst the various, you know, dangerous narratives that have come out there about sectarianism and various things, the reality of it is the IFA, I think, have got questions to answer, because Chris alluded to it there. Glentoran, Coleraine, Tiftonville, they don't want new stands. They don't want new facilities. They need them. I'll be at Solitude tomorrow night supporting Linfield, and I assume Chris will be there supporting Tiftonville. There'll be one stand totally empty because it's condemned. It's a health and safety hazard. Now, what I really want to know is why the AFA come out here with no plan B. They put all their eggs into the Casement Park basket, and in my view, put a proverbial gun to the head of the Northern Ireland fans, who have zero relationship with the upper echelons of the AFA because of price gouging when it comes to ticketing, because of a total lack of engagement.
They wouldn't say gouging.
Well, I'd call it gouging, because if you're going to be charged that amount of money to watch Luxembourg at Windsor Park, it's quite frankly a disgrace. But that's just a story for another call or another show. But fundamentally, Mark, Patrick Nelson came out. I don't know who advised him. I don't know why they were advised to promote, let's be blunt, another sport getting long-term facilities. That shouldn't be a X on the GAA card, because Jarrett Burns is entirely right. The GAA should get what they deserve. But the problem I have is, if that's the case, money was set aside for local stadiums at the same time. Now, if it's 400 million, which I think, quite frankly, has been expanded slightly to suit the British government's narrative. However, if that's the case, then Solitude, the Oval, Coleraine should be afforded extra money as well.
David,
don't forget the Brandywell on that, David.
Sorry, thanks, Chris. No, absolutely. Although a team
people in Derry are very suspicious when they hear themselves being left out of things. You know that.
Absolutely. Although the fact that Derry City playing another league will raise enough. We'll do that another day, Chris. I don't think we've time this morning.
David, I don't know if you heard me talking to Mervyn Gibson about the big picture here. Patrick Nelson can speak for himself, and it's a pity he wouldn't come on and say this, but my impression of what he has tried to do here is think outside the box, if you pardon the pun. You know, if you live here, if you're a leader, you have a certain responsibility. And he had this vision, and it was a board decision, but he led this decision to say, you know what, let's do something different. It's the Euros. There's another statement, just a mile up the road, where they're about to build a bigger stadium. Let's see if we can bring Belfast together, not just the sporting community, but the community as a whole. And he has had this vision. He tried it. It didn't work. Should he not be commended for having that ambition?
Well, I think as far as I'm aware, Patrick Nelson doesn't actually live in the country. But again, he can answer that question if he was to come on to speak to you. But I mean, I think fundamentally, Mark, that's fine about community relations, but my view is that Patrick Nelson has not promoted Casement because he has some long-term vision for Northern Ireland. I mean, he's not from Northern Ireland. For me, there was a lot of self-serving there, where he wanted to get the Euros, a major tournament in Northern Ireland, which would allow him the opportunity to add that to his CV. And I think that the wider concern is, if you were Patrick Nelson, you'd have to say, almost 10 years on from Euro 2016, why, when Northern Ireland come to train pre-match in Northern Ireland, why do they not have anywhere to call a home? They don't have a national training centre, which England have, which Scotland have, and that should be a wider concern. Paddy Nelson should be looking at, local football. Bill Casement, by all accounts, absolutely no issue with that. But, you know, support and invest in local football. You know, the Northern Ireland captain, Mark Trehumer, the current captain, he was at Linfield in the academy on loan at Ballymena United, and he's now captaining Northern Ireland. Stuart Dallas is the same. And many other players like it, Brad Lyons and many others. So I think, we can't make this into a case of it's Casement or nothing, because fundamentally, you know, that's a short-term vision, even though many will argue that, you know, there's longer-term implications and continued relations. Absolutely.
Mark, can I say something in Patrick Nelson's defence?
Yeah, well, please do. He may say that's a low blow. He's not from Northern Ireland. I mean, I don't want to go and look at his birth certificate or the birth certificate of a lot of players who have played for Northern Ireland and worn that shirt with pride. And David Grimm, I don't remember you saying that. Oh, well, they're not from Northern Ireland.
The most successful manager of either international Irish team was Jack Charlton. He certainly was. In fact, he won a World Cup for England. You know, so let's put it in perspective. I think Patrick Nelson is commended. I think you described it, Mark, as thinking outside the box. I think he wasn't shackled maybe by what unfortunately so many here are. He saw an opportunity. He said, look, this is going to get built. The British government has encasement. The British government were pledging to give money on top. So it was a unique opportunity. Yeah. He lost nothing. You know, really, there was nothing for the IFA to lose out of. In fact, a lot to gain. There have been 17 runnings of the European Championships. Northern Ireland qualified for one, 2016. So the likelihood is that unless they get through as a host, and they're not going to be a host now, then it's unlikely. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it's unlikely, given that qualification so far has been 1 out of 17, that Northern Ireland's going to be involved in 2028.
Okay.
So you can have a context where the island of Ireland is going to host the Euros, probably England and at least one of the other two, Scotland and Wales, are going to be in it, and Northern Ireland's going to be left out.
Okay.
So from Patrick Nelson's point of view, it was an open goal opportunity which arose, and he also knew Northern Ireland would be able to gain access to Caseham Park when they needed to.
Tom Kelly, I don't know if you've ever been a referee. I'm going to ask you to referee this conversation. You've got about 90 seconds to tell us what you think about the IFA's handling of all of this.
I kind of agree with Chris. I think they saw it as an opportunity to broaden their own appeal and to have an international competition played in Northern Ireland, which would have an uplift for soccer. And by the way, you know I'm a Spurs man, but I'm not a diehard soccer fan. With good reason. But the bottom line is this was an opportunity to uplift soccer in Northern Ireland for tens of thousands of young children who play soccer week in, week out at school or on Saturday or Sunday leagues. And they would have been inspired with that. And I think that that is what the IFA had their eye on. And not down some, you know, narrow, no vision approach to just because the stadium that was getting the biggest uplift was Casement. I think that you have to see a bigger picture all the time. Otherwise, Northern Ireland is going to remain a parochial backwater.
You have 10 seconds. David Graham will give you the final word. Oh, he's gone.
Children, but if they don't have facilities to use post-2028, well, then it's a short-term vision. That's the reality.
Well, I think it's maybe a score draw in terms of this, but we're going to keep talking about it. You've been texting us, you've been ringing us. There's a lot to talk about Casement Park, including will it ever be built? And if it's going to be built, where's the money going to come from? If you have any ideas, or maybe if you've been working on the project, give us a call on The Nolan Show this Monday morning. And this is The Nolan Show. I'm Mark Simpson, stepping in all week. And we're talking about Casement Park a little bit more for the next 5 or 10 minutes. Keep your calls coming in. Keep your texts coming in. And I said before the 10 o'clock news, text us if you have an opinion. Text us if you've worked on the project. And we have a text from someone who says they were one of the structural engineers for Casement Park. And they say they're enraged that DUP representatives are talking about a plan B. They say there was no viable plan B in Belfast. Only Casement Park, because it was a work in progress, was ever going to be able to be fitted out for the Euros. And this structural engineer says it's a massive missed opportunity. What do you think? Albert is on the air from Belfast. Good morning, Albert. What's your point?
Good morning, Mark. First of all, can I say that, yes, it's down to finances. Now the Euros are not coming to Belfast. But if you look at this week, the finance minister, the first and deputy first ministers were at with a begging bowl down to Westminster, saying that they haven't any money to run Northern Ireland, or they haven't enough money to run Northern Ireland. And they had the begging bowl out. So when it comes to Gordon Lyons, the minister, has he got the 60 million or 62 million in the bank for the casement for the GAA? You know, and the thing is, the GAA must have thought when they heard about the Euros, they're rubbing their hands because they were going to get a free stadium, that the governments were going to build the stadium, especially when Sunak basically made the decision to say he would build the stadium. He would give money to the stadium. And now the Labour Party have egg in their face because they said they would do to give the money. But the thing is, Mark, think about the pensioners. Gordon Lyons said it would take 60 million for their heating allowance. And what is it going to cost the health service with people basically that can't heat their homes and end up in the hospital? So think about the pensioners.
Okay, Albert, and all thank you. Money. Thank you. It would be good to speak to the Communities Minister, Gordon Lyons, about all of that before the end of the week. Let's talk to Adrian in Belfast too. Good morning, Adrian.
Good morning, Mark. I think back to when Croke Park was being done up, and at no point did they ever shut the stadium. And within the space of 4 or 5 years, they kept it open and redeveloped it. So I'm just wondering, was it a mistake to shut Casement Park entirely?
What do you think, Adrian?
And in hindsight, it looks like a major gaffe when you take into consideration all the developments that came afterwards, and especially when the costs have blown out of proportion. So I think question marks need to be asked around the role of the minister at the time who made that decision.
We might come back to the calls before the end of the programme, so keep them coming in. One last question for you, Adrian. Do you think Casement Park will ever be built?
It will be built, but probably not before the end of this decade.
Fair point. You might be right. Let us know what you think. Send us a text or call. We're going to keep talking about money because two of our four city deals here are understood to be at risk. This news also broke last Friday. The government announced it had paused funding for all four deals ahead of the UK spending review. Then it emerged over the weekend that maybe only two of the deals were in jeopardy, the one in Belfast, the one in Derry and Strabane. They may be okay. It's all a bit confusing, but the Finance Minister, Caoimhe Archibald, talked about this yesterday on the Sunday Politics programme.
My understanding is Belfast is going ahead, but what I have in black and white at the minute is that the Derry and Strabane deal is going ahead, and so I'm waiting for further information and clarification from Treasury. We need to see the same happening for the other deals, for Causeway Coast and Glens and for Mid-South West. We understand too are going ahead as planned. There is a pause on the other, and obviously I am making the case that that is reversed immediately because we need to give certainty to those projects as well.
So what's going on? I'm really confused here. Why put out an announcement on Friday, the same day, of course, that the casement announcement came out, and then reverse half of the announcement over the weekend? What is going on? Let's talk to the financial journalist Paul Gosling in a moment. First of all, the Alliance Party MLA, Owen Tennyson. Owen, just make it very clear to our listeners this morning, what is the latest?
Well, unfortunately, I can't shed much more light on the situation, Mark, because the government's communication and handling of this has been utterly shambolic and short-sighted. Like you, I learned late on Friday that the city deal funding was going to be paused, followed by another announcement that funding for casement was no longer going to be made available in time for the Euros. And that is no way to do business. I think it undermines trust and confidence between the executive and central government, but also I think sends a really damaging message to potential investors into Northern Ireland around the certainty that they will get from government and whether they can rely on pre-existing commitments. So the handling of this has been totally shambolic and has placed, I think, really unnecessary stress on deal partners in Derry and Strabane and in the Belfast region. But I remain hugely concerned in relation to the Mid-South West deal and the Causeway Coast and Glens deal. Those deals amount to over £300 million of funding, which is now uncertain, which is intended to drive our economy, okay, to improve productivity and innovation. And those regions need that investment every bit as much as Belfast or the Derry City and Strabane area.
OK, I'm going to ask Paul Gosling in a moment to explain exactly what a city deal is. But first of all, what towns are we talking about, Owen, in terms of Mid-South-West region? What does that mean?
So Mid-South-West covers Armagh, Banbridge and Craigavon, Mid Ulster and Fermanagh, South Tyrone. Mid-South-West is currently the less advanced deal, if you like, but it is the second most significant in terms of the funding that has been allocated.
Yeah.
And this has now placed that entire process in flux, whereby councils are working through a process at the minute to identify projects. But they're doing that now in the absence of any certainty around the funding envelope. And look, the Chancellor has talked up her economic credentials. She's talked up the need for economic growth. And I would say surely the Chancellor can appreciate that this approach is not cost neutral. This pause will have a scarring impact in terms of these projects' ability to progress.
Paul Gosling, what is a city deal?
Well, the city deals initially came in England, where the idea was to give local authorities and groups of local authorities more power to control their communities and their regions. And in return, they got additional money, which would lead to higher levels of productivity and therefore, on the back of that, less financial support from central government. Now, what's happened in terms of the devolved nations has been different from that model that was used in England, because, yes, there's been money that's gone in, essentially capital money to support the improvement in productivity, economic growth, but you don't have the same arrangement in terms of additional localised powers to influence the control of the local economy. But in terms of Derry and Belfast, it's based very much around strengthening the local economy, regenerating the places and improving productivity.
So in economic terms, are you banking on success here, or is it still a little bit of a gamble, a city deal?
Well, nothing's ever certain in life, is it? apart from death and taxes. But you would certainly hope that the deals in Derry and in Belfast will pay for themselves. You would expect, I mean, there was analysis done this week which says that the five most deprived council areas in the whole of the United Kingdom are in Northern Ireland. And the most deprived of all of those is Derry, and the second most deprived is Belfast. So you can understand why it makes sense for central government to provide additional money to these local economies to get them motoring in ways they haven't in the past. And you can see that in terms of Belfast and the growth of the green economy and renewable energy. And you can see that in Derry in terms of the investment into the university to improve the economic drivers of the economy in terms of life sciences, the School of Medicine, personalised medicine. So you can see how you hope, intend, expect this to actually achieve significant growth and therefore higher taxes, and therefore it pays for itself with government.
Over what period of time would you notice any difference, would you say, Paul? I suppose it's not an exact science.
Well, some of it pretty well immediately. I mean, for example, this will potentially on Wednesday give the green light to making contracts in place for the building of the new School of Medicine on the riverside in Derry, and also the new DNA Museum, the Derry North Atlantic Museum, which will create a new visitor centre. And so basically, if you get construction on site, then you can see an immediate investment return, because you've got people working who would otherwise perhaps not be working. So, and they'll be spending money in the local economy. So yes, there'll be some immediate return. In terms of the development of a life sciences economy within Derry, which would be really beneficial for the city, I mean, that obviously will take more years, because you've got people going through the research process in the university, and maybe 10, 15 years down the line, you then have a number of local companies, and we know there's one large life sciences company that would like to locate in Derry and is eyeing these things very closely.
Do you think I'm right, Paul, in speculating that, yeah, Belfast, Derry City and Strabane are going to be OK, but Mid-South West, Causeway Coast and Glens are now snookered? There's no chance for them now.
I think that's overstating it, Mark. I wouldn't say snookered. I think there will be a much tougher oversight of those two schemes. They are less well developed, and perhaps the economic outcomes that are anticipated from them are less certain. I think there will be a lot of interrogation about whether they are justified. They are less economically focused than the Belfast and Derry ones. So I think the councils involved might be lucky to get the amount of money that they've been looking for.
And Paul, you know what they'll say over here. Oh, it's the big cities, they get everything. These smaller provincial towns like Corrien or Armagh or Banbridge, they get nothing.
Yeah, you can understand that. But on the other hand, you have to look at the deprivation statistics. You have to look at the unemployment, the economic inactivity, the poverty. And we have particular problems in part of Belfast, in North and West Belfast, and real serious crisis over generations in Derry. So what are you going to do to turn it around? How are you going to create jobs? How are you going to create incomes? I mean, this is a really good way of actually addressing some of those weaknesses.
Owen Tennyson, I'm going to ask you this question as well, but I want to ask Paul Gosling it too. Paul, you're a financial journalist, not a political journalist, but the bungling of this announcement last weekend, and as you know over here, it's been difficult to guess what the Secretary of State is going to do next. In terms of the big picture, how do you think this new Labour government has handled the economy so far?
I think appallingly, isn't it, eh? I mean, what have they done right so far? I mean, yes, it's an appalling way of communicating, and actually the decisions have not been shown to be right. I mean, this is just a mess. We expected competence from a new government, and we're not getting it at the moment.
Owen Tennyson?
Well, I think some of the decisions that Labour have taken so far, to be blunt about it, Mark, would make the Tories blush. They have talked about the Tories' mismanagement of the economy, and yet they're imposing the Conservatives' fiscal rules upon themselves. And so I think their handling of the economy so far has been abysmal, and they have let down the very regions and cities which they promised they would level up and invest in Northern Ireland. So, look, I hope this is a bit of shadow boxing before there's some good news in the October budget, but it certainly doesn't look like that's going to be the case, and I would urge the Chancellor and the wider government to change course urgently, because this is not the change that people across the UK voted for.
Paul Gosling, Owen Tennyson, thank you both very much. Back to our top story. The funding for Casement Park. Is the London government going to pay any more? Is the GAA itself going to pay any more than the £15 million it has already promised? What about the Irish government? It seems pretty flush with cash at the moment. Could it pay more than the £42 million sterling it has always pledged? You've been texting us. You've been phoning us. Let's go back to those phone lines. Jim is on the line from Drumquin. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking maybe the Secretary of State, Mr. Bernhard, might have done the people in Northern Ireland a good turn by not rushing into this. Because my personal opinion is it's wrong to spend that amount of money on Casement Park. That's such an unlimited place that you can't have anything else outside of it. And into the Biden, there was always a problem with the residents living there. So that might crop up again. I would suggest if we pick an ore site somewhere in Northern Ireland, I would suggest a short walk from the city of Derry Airport would be a good place to put the new Gaelic Centre.
Right, on the road out to Eglinton there?
Well, that could be it. But no, I mean, you could take an airplane from America or something like that and land at London Derry Airport and then... That's about it.
Well, I'm sure Derry and Donegal GAA would like that, but it would take a long time, Jim, wouldn't it? Like, you'd be starting from scratch. You'd need to buy the land, get planning permission, get the money.
That's very true. Yeah. That's a good point, surely. But things can be done, you know.
Aye.
There's wheels within wheels. And really, I would suggest, I'm not saying it has to be anywhere in particular. I come up with that idea because I hate bringing this up, but there's always a problem with the sewage disposal works.
Jim.
You could suggest
that can of worms, literally. Jim, if they build the stadium in the northwest, they'll have to call it after you. Good idea. Martin in West Belfast. Martin, how would you like the stadium to go elsewhere now?
No, I just wanted you to prove, Mark, you were going on this morning about the DUP and everybody else when it was a residents group that held us back for 12 years, 14 years?
Well, they didn't. Not for 12 or 14 years. There was planning permission.
How long was the court case going on?
Well, it wasn't 12 years anyway.
Right, well, how long? 10 years? 12, 8 years?
It was less than that. By the time they got planning permission, then it was overturned. It may have held it up for 4 or 5 years. I need to check my facts.
The residents group still want this there?
Well, what do you think?
Well, it doesn't matter to me because I'm not being it.
Why not?
Because it's a Gaelic pitch. It's going to be helping. It'll probably be called after Bobby Story.
It's Casement Park. They're not going to change the name.
They're going to put a monument up for the wee soldier that died.
Martin, thanks very much indeed. Porrig is on the line also from Belfast. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Just your previous speaker. See, when the Casement Park closed 2013, and the residents in Moorland Park had a legitimate concern about the height of that particular side of the stadium. So it was agreed to reduce the numbers from 38,000 to 34. And that protest only lasted a year or two. And that was agreed by Ulster Council and the developers. But in my opinion, I've said to your, one of your colleagues earlier, that I think the way in which to get around this, because me, as being a member of the GAA all my life, and I want Casement Park to be up, I wanted it up and running within a year or two after by 2015, 2016. But if they reduce the height, or sorry, the capacity to about 25,000, in my opinion, I've been to many grounds around the country. Obviously, you've got Thurles, Park of Cave, Croke Park, they're they can hold 50,000, 60,000, 80,000 capacity. Ground. And I know the Ulster could be 34,000 because over the, on average, the past 10 years, 15 years, 34, 35,000 have been going to the Ulster finals. But that's only been a one-off. And I think even if you had the likes of Cork, Limerick, Tipperary, Dublin footballers, Kerry footballers coming up to Croke Park, 25,000, in my opinion, would be more than enough. And I'm not an economist, but I believe it'd be a lot cheaper than the £400 million, which is being talked about. And given the price, I should be in the Belton game myself. Given the price of material, it's literally going through the roof. Mm. And see, by the time they're talking about £400 million now. And if it starts, and I hope it does start, if it starts, you're talking about a lot more money.
Porrig, thank you very much indeed. One more caller on this. Alex in Lisburn, what's your point?
Well, it's just another thing said there, with the locals objecting. I mean, there's a photograph of the site in the Belfast Telegraph, and you look at it, this house is all around it, tight up, tight, close to it. I just think it was a non-starter to build such a big stadium on that site. I'm also critical of the GAA. They put up a certain amount of money, I think 15 million, and they refused to budge. But then on the TV, I think yesterday, the head of the GAA was claiming that the money from Dublin was their money as well.
Yeah, well, they negotiated that, Alex.
They may have negotiated, but it wasn't their money. If I was going into business or something like that, I'd be thinking, you need to watch this boy very closely. Quite right. The other thing I'm making is this.
Alex, because we have another quick call.
It's called after a leading Republican.
Yeah.
Is it right that public money were put in a building that identifies with one side of the community? Would you get away with that if it was the King Billy Stadium?
A historical figure. We'll maybe talk about that more.
So is King Billy.
We'll talk about... Well, there's a Boyne Bridge. Alex, we'll talk to you maybe again later in the week. Quick call, quick comment from George in Guildford. Hi, George.
Hello, Mark. Mark, you've heard, I'm sure, them men there talked about it. The people around that said they couldn't cope with a 35,000 stadium. And it would have been built if they'd have put it at 25 long ago. And Liam Backett and David Jeffrey and all these pundits all say, and I agree with them, the GAA is entitled to the same as Windsor Park Ravenhill.
Kingspan, yep. Gotcha.
Yes, they're entitled to that, and okay. Full stop. And all this talk about, like, how are you going to go on a programme in a day or two and cry for the health service?
Yep.
Health service and people land that can't get help is more important than sport.
George, thank you. You've made your point, and you've made it loudly. We're going to talk about sport, Premiership football, before we go. Not about the fact that Liverpool were beaten at home at the weekend and Manchester United won away. We're going to talk about Manchester City and their alleged breaches of the Premier League's financial rules. We've been waiting a long time for a hearing to take place on all of this. Man City deny all the charges against them, and their boss, Pep Guardiola, had this to say about it all last week.
I'm happy that it started on Monday, and I know you will be more rumours and new specialists about the sentences that come up. We're going to see. So I know what the people are looking for. I know what they're expecting. I know it. Everybody's innocent and, guilt is proven.
Right. The hearing is about to get underway. Let's speak to Kevin Garside, chief sports correspondent at the I newspaper. Morning, Kevin. We've been waiting a long time for this, haven't we?
Yes, we have. The notice of the inquiry was launched in 2018, December 2018. It took 5 years to produce charges and another 18 months to get them to this point. And who knows before we hear what the final outcome is.
Unlikely to be 2024, is it, Kevin?
Oh, look, this is going on now. This will take us till Christmas just to go pile 10 weeks to 12 weeks, which will take us up till Christmas, won't it? And then probably a similar length of time to collate the evidence, get the arguments sorted for the Premier League to give their ruling. And then, given that something is as hotly contested as this, that's been going on for so long, whoever loses, it won't be a draw, will it? So whoever loses will more than likely appeal it, which then takes it further on. So, you know, we could be halfway through 2025 before we get a definitive outcome here.
Looks like extra time, and we don't know if there are going to be any penalties. Is it taking place behind closed doors?
Yes, it is. Yeah, in an informal setting. Yes, yeah. So not in a courtroom setting. So there'll be no wigs and stuff. So the highest paid lawyers on earth will just be probably in a suit and tie. It might even be in t-shirts. Who knows? But yeah, I think it's in probably in a hotel with a big conference function in London. The setting is informed. The legal arguments will be pin sharp. And it's costing both organisations millions. And what we can say without any fear of contradiction or doubt is that the owners in Abu Dhabi, Manchester City's owners, have more money than the Premier League. So, you know, if this was Game of Thrones, you know who'd win, but it isn't. So. They're on a very, very, very sticky wicket here, City, aren't they? Because we know the basis of the case, even though all charges are denied. But there's a sense in which, and Pep's right in this, there's a sense in which judgment has already been passed. So let's see.
Kevin, listeners over here will remember, and I'm sure you do too, what happened to Rangers in Scotland all those years ago when they got into financial difficulties and ended up having to go to the bottom of the whole league. Is that even a possibility with Manchester City?
Yes, it is, yes. In the conjecture of what might happen if City lose, you know, there's a feeling that, you know, sending them down to the Championship, one division, for example, expelling them from the Premier League to the next tier down, will, it's like, so what? You know, they might, it's like finishing second in the Premier League. You know, they'll be back next year and then they'll win it again. So there is a sense in which if punishments are draconian and they are to be expelled, then it might well be all the way down to the fourth tier to the bottom of the 92 clubs, which would be interesting for them. The players, you know, do they want to spend the next 4 years at their peak, give their peaks to running through Mansfield and Port Vale? You know, I doubt it. But again, it's a fascinating period that we're in now. Again, no one knows how this is going to play out, so it's all speculation. But what we do know, there are 115 charges or 129, depending on how you bundle them up, to do with financial misconduct and how they paid their players, their manager, and how they presented their accounts. And how they complied with the investigation, which for the most part they didn't.
Kevin, finally, we've only got 30 seconds left, and I promise we'll delete your answer from BBC Sounds if you're wrong. But tell us what you think is going to happen at the end of all of this.
I'm wrong about most things, but I think there could even be a diplomatic solution here. You can see the governments of the United Kingdom and Abu Dhabi having a right set to over this. But I think that my own feeling is that there is a case to answer and that they will have to answer for it. It then becomes a question of where the penalties sit.
Kevin Garsay, chief sports correspondent at the I newspaper and legal expert too. Thank you. Thank you for listening today. I'm back tomorrow. We'll see you then. Connor Phillips, who else? He's next.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @Stephen Nolan.